From the JAMA Network, this is JAMA Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery Author Interviews. Conversations with authors exploring the latest clinical research, reviews, and opinions featured in JAMA Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this JAMA Otolaryngology Author Interview from the JAMA Network. I'm Dr. Joseph Bradley, the online editor for JAMA Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery. For the August 27th online first edition, we're excited to be focusing significantly on cochlear implantation for adults. Joining us today, we have Dr. Craig Buckman, the Lindberg Professor and Chair of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery from Washington University and St. Louis School of Medicine. Dr. Buckman serves as the first or senior author on all four of the cochlear implant articles being presented in this edition. Thank you, Dr. Buckman, for taking the time for this today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for the invitation.
Dr. Buckman, we know that hearing loss increases substantially as patients age, such that by age 70, two-thirds of adults are hard of hearing. What are the health implications of this, and why should we as society care?
Hearing loss is one of the leading causes of disability worldwide, affecting over 450 million people, which is more than 6% of the population. And it's expected to increase above 600 million by the year 2030 and even over 900 million by 2050. Hearing loss has substantial impact on people's lives, including communication difficulties, social isolation, depression, falls, and even increased healthcare utilization. All of these can, of course, then impact employment opportunities, social functioning, and quality of life. In addition, hearing loss has recently been identified as the single largest modifiable risk factor for dementia, a problem that we all worry about as we age.
What are the thoughts behind why it's such a modifiable risk factor for dementia? What appears to be the link?
Truth is, we don't know yet. We're still starting to learn more about that. And so some believe that, of course, sensory deprivation can be a driver in decreased communication. But honestly, we don't know.
Fair enough. Well, certainly for those that become incredibly hard of hearing, there are opportunities for cochlear implantation. We know that it serves as one of the most successful neuroprostheses that medicine has to offer, but at the same time, it remains incredibly underutilized. For our listeners who may not be as familiar, can you share with us the current indications for implantation in adults?
In common terms, if people have significant hearing loss and receive minimal benefit from appropriately fit hearing aids, they may be a cochlear implant candidate, and they should undergo an evaluation by a cochlear implant center. Typically, cochlear implant candidates are those people that have difficulty talking on the phone, and they struggle significantly in conversations, especially in the presence of background noise. We can test this specifically by testing patients with their hearing aids and ask them to repeat words and sentences and see how many they can get correct. And if they score below a certain level, then we think that they might be a cochlear implant candidate.
Do you see differences in these indications amongst patients who have private insurance versus Medicare?
Medicare criteria has lagged a bit behind those that are labeled on the various FDA-approved products, and those labels are what many of the private insurers use as their criteria. Medicare specifically requires individuals with bilateral moderate to profound hearing loss to score less than 40% correct on open-set sentence material while they're using their hearing aids. This contrasts with the private insurers that usually have a broader inclusion, maybe upwards of 50 or 60%. The private insurers are now commonly approving other conditions too, such as asymmetric hearing loss or even single-sided hearing loss, and sometimes people with disabling tinnitus when they have hearing loss as well. So the private insurers are covering more people than Medicare is today.
Well, I think that kind of leads us into talking directly about the studies being published here to examine some of these indications and whether or not it's time for Medicare to consider the expansion. I'd like to actually start with the first trial that was looking at speech understanding, hearing, and quality of life outcomes after cochlear implantation. Can you tell us a little bit about the population you were studying and the primary outcomes being examined?
So just a little bit about sort of cochlear implant trials. You know, there have been really relatively few cochlear implant trials to date. Rather, most what we have out there are small case series that have reported, and the designs of those trials did not include a comprehensive group of outcome measures, or they didn't require that patients were fit with best fitting practices for hearing aids. Mm-hmm. And so this particular trial that we're going to talk about is one of the first trials that examines sort of a more holistic group of outcome measures, not only just the speech perception, but also speech perception and noise, hearing and health-related quality of life, as well as cognitive screening. And so the patients for the trial was a group of adults with an average age of 71 with moderate to profound hearing loss that scored less than 40% on single word scores in the ear to be implanted, or 50% overall. And that's more of an inclusive criteria than the previous studies that used the sentence materials, which are a bit easier. And we also included Medicare beneficiaries in an attempt to show that these individuals can benefit from cochlear implants with this expanded set of indications.
Can you tell me a little bit about why you and your colleagues wanted to examine patients both with and without mild cognitive impairment?
Over the years, many people had actually a lot of concerns that patients with cognitive impairment might not be able to use the signal of a cochlear implant because of deficiencies in the central nervous system and central processing. So, and also given the recognition recently that hearing loss is one of the most modifiable factors, as we talked about, mm-hmm. with cognitive decline and dementia, there's a lot of interest in understanding if cochlear implants can actually stabilize or even reverse that cognitive decline, although, you know, only time will tell.
Sure. So tell us a bit about the major findings from this trial.
So the major findings of this trial are that cochlear implants create significant and clinically meaningful improvements in speech perception in both quiet and in noise compared to best fit hearing aids. And the intervention is very, very safe with few side effects. These improvements in hearing translate to improvements in health-related quality of life. Importantly, individuals with and without mild cognitive impairment both achieved similar improvements, implying that mild cognitive impairment is not really a contraindication to cochlear implants. And there was a general trend to improve results on cognitive testing. But given the short duration of our study, we're not really ready to proclaim that cochlear implants definitively improve cognition among people with pre-existing mild cognitive impairment. That's the one that we're after for the future.
It sounds promising at the very least.
Yeah, it certainly does. There's other studies out there that are suggesting that as well.
And I guess that probably goes back to the idea of perhaps maybe some of these cognitive issues being due to sensory deprivation. So that if all of a sudden you're getting that sensory information that you were missing, perhaps that's the stabilization.
That's the theory. I mean, only time will tell, but we certainly think that might be the case.
Yeah. Interestingly, even though the average age of these patients was above 70, you then had enough patients to kind of do a secondary analysis looking at patients specifically over 65 years of age in order to really kind of examine that population a little bit more, looking at audiometric improvements, quality of life, and risk of adverse events. Can you tell us a bit about what your colleagues found with this?
We were interested in this subset of individuals over age 65, really, as we sort of talked about before, to inform us better about performance in the Medicare beneficiary population. In that group of participants, the mean age was 74 instead of the overall trial was 71. And we actually saw very similar findings to the full study. That is, you know, there were significant and meaningful improvements in speech perception in both quiet and noise, as well as hearing and health-related quality of life. So that was, we were happy to see that.
Certainly, as surgeons, we always worry about operating on older patients and the risks of adverse events. Did you really see much of that within this older population?
No, actually, we saw cochlear implantation to be extremely safe, even in the elderly. And I think other less stringent trials and less stringent reports have found similar outcomes. Cochlear implants are really safe. Most people can get the operation in under a couple of hours, and very rarely do they actually have to even stay in the hospital.
Well, certainly based on the fact that they appear to respond well to the implantation and there's a fairly minimal risk profile overall, don't you think this speaks to the fact that we probably should not have clear age cutoffs for the use of this device?
I think you're spot on, Joe. Medicare beneficiaries really do respond beautifully to this technology and deserve this expanded criteria, similar to those that are below the age of 65. It's somewhat of an arbitrary number, in fact. So given the cognitive findings of the first study, and we know cognitive decline is much more common amongst these elderly as well, and the safety profile, we could argue that this population has an awful lot to gain from this intervention.
Well, and I think based on this data that your group has found, as well as some of the data seen within the other case series, the argument really was made to then open up a trial with CMS for expansion of indications that your team has led, correct?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, this particular project that's also reported, which looks at expansion with CMS, this actually started all the way back in 2011 when a group of hearing health professionals, including myself, we met actually with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is CMS, to explore using this. So back as far as 2011, At that time, we wanted to look and see if we could expand from the 40% number with sentences that we talked about earlier to upwards to 60. And, you know, they really pushed us to want to take that on. So in response to that meeting back in 2011, John Naparco, who's no longer with us, and Terry Zwolin and I partnered together with the American Cochlear Implant Alliance and CMS to create this study that you're referring to.
Sure. So can you tell me a little bit more about the expanded criteria that you and all of your colleagues were investigating in that trial?
So typical CMS criteria are when people use their hearing aids, you have to score basically under 40% on sentences using both hearing aids. And so in this particular trial, what we proposed and did is we worked with CMS to use an expanded group of scores. And so people could score upwards of 60% to be included in this trial using their best fit amplification.
Now, my understanding is that the trial was closed early due to subject accrual. However, despite that, the findings from this trial are rather significant. The AZBio sentence test scores in the best aided condition and in the cochlear implant alone condition were much larger at both the 6 and 12-month intervals than what had been the predefined minimally clinically important changes of 25 and 30%. And in fact, the median AZBio scores went from about 53% in the best aided condition to 89% and 24% in the cochlear implant alone condition to 77%. What are the implications of this?
Well, I'm glad to see you've done your homework. You're right. And as often is the case, we ran into a variety of roadblocks, mostly around funding, that slowed our patient accrual. Nonetheless, we did show that patients enrolled and followed for upper 12 months demonstrated significant improvements in speech perception. Again, you know, just as you said, confirming that Medicare beneficiaries meeting these criteria benefit from cochlear implants. So that's the good news that came out of this trial.
You know, Dr. Beckman, for my simple laryngologist mind, to me, this sounds like a no-brainer for Medicare to expand the indications for use. I know things like this, these processes can be fairly complicated, and sometimes there can be politics involved. So what are the next steps in actually trying to achieve the expansion of those CMS indications?
Well, you'll be glad to know that this process is already moving forward. Since the trial was closed and we passed the 12-month time, and we got the data together, we actually have already presented our findings to CMS, and they were very impressed by the results. So we're happy for that. The next steps forward beyond our publication, which is part of it, is to ask CMS to undertake something called a national coverage determination, which is some paperwork, but it's a thing that you ask CMS to take on regarding cochlear implant indications. And then what they do is they do a review of the literature, which of course will find the paper that we are publishing, as well as maybe some other information that's out there. And they would include their work and any other stuff that they can find. And then they open it up to public comment. There's a couple of public comment periods that will pop up. And then based on public comments and the literature that they have, they go on to try and make a decision as to whether or not they should do the expansion. And as you sort of mentioned, politics, obviously, this will in some way or another depend on what the CMS budget looks like.
What kind of time frame can we be looking at until that could be achieved? I know it's hard to predict the future, and many of our crystal balls really aren't working quite well right now. But on average, what kind of time frame might people expect?
Yeah, I'm betting we're looking at least another year beyond our publication. So it's, you know, we're probably looking at, 2022 before it's something that actually takes hold. But yeah, this is sorely needed.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. I will be very fascinated to watch and see how this progresses over the next couple of years. As we come toward the end of this podcast, I'd like to turn to the final paper from the group, which was a systematic review and a Delphi consensus statement. So despite how long cochlear implants have been in use, I was actually surprised that a Delphi consensus had never been conducted previously. I know that you and your colleagues agreed to a total of 20 individual statements, but there were really kind of three key area subtopics identified the panel. Can you talk with our listeners a little bit about that?
Delphi processes are interesting, and it's really been quite unusual for any group to take on a project of this size and come up with 20 statements. Usually these consensus statements are much more limited, but you know, we got together a big group and we were successful there. But the statements basically, as you said, can be bucketed into three areas: those that provide recommendations for best practices with regards to diagnosis, surgery, and aftercare. We also explored the clinical effectiveness of cochlear implants, of which we have a few papers in this journal now. and then factors that may affect cochlear implant clinical effectiveness. And then finally, we wanted to highlight the relationship between hearing loss and mental health, including depression and dementia, which we also talked about earlier.
So I'd like to kind of just briefly talk about a few of these statements that really spoke to me and I think may also speak to some of our listeners. The first, obviously, is statement one, where the consensus was that awareness of cochlear implantation amongst primary care providers as well as hearing health care providers is inadequate. What do you feel are some of the barriers to utilization and how can we actually start to push this forward?
The major barriers really among primary care and even hearing healthcare workers is understanding one, who is actually a cochlear implant candidate, knowing that these devices work really well and even better than hearing aids in appropriate individuals, and knowing that surgery is really safe and is not experimental. And importantly, it's not brain surgery, it's actually ear surgery. Specifically, many people believe that these devices are only for people who are totally deaf. And all of the papers discussed today show us that the cochlear implants actually work really well for people with lesser degrees of hearing loss. So people who gain benefit from their hearing aids, but it remains insufficient, are people that should be considered still for a cochlear implant evaluation. For the general population, as the number of people get these devices, they'll begin to become more commonplace in our society. And also people have become much more accepting of technology today. So the cultural barriers of wearing a hearing device or even any sort of electronic device in our ears like you and I are probably wearing right now are certainly waning. Lastly, we need to educate health professionals and the public using common descriptions of who might be a cochlear implant candidate rather than talking about percentages of corrects and some of these more common technical terms. So I usually say if you can't talk easily on the phone, you might be a cochlear implant candidate. Also, for the generalist physician, if patients can't carry on a normal conversation when your back is facing them, especially while you're washing your hands, they might actually be a cochlear implant candidate. And we as physicians really need to educate the benefits and safety of these devices. Recently, we formed a consumer and professional advocacy committee across the globe to bridge this gap between the Delphi consensus group and the population at large.
You know, a thought that just came to me was that many patients, of course, are worried about the costs of hearing aids, and that is often a substantial barrier to them even wanting to proceed with that. How do cochlear implants factor into those same kinds of discussions?
So cochlear implants are covered by insurance, and so most carriers really fully cover the cost of a cochlear implant, at least from what the patient sees. Now, we could argue about whether that's enough to cover hospital costs and other things, but...
Yeah, totally different conversation.
Right. But for the most part, people that have insurance or Medicare for that reason, both of those are actually well covered. And so that's really not a barrier to receiving a cochlear implant. And in fact, many places, Medicaid covers cochlear implants, although not all states cover them for adults. So while there might be some out-of-pocket costs if your deductibles are high, cochlear implants are being covered. That does contrast with hearing aids, which are not covered by Medicare and are generally out-of-pocket for most people.
Certainly, I think that motivation alone would serve as a great talking point for primary care providers, hearing care providers as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So statements 9 and 10 within this consensus make it very clear that implants significantly improve hearing-related quality of life and that eligible adults should be implanted as soon as possible. And then statement 13 indicates that long periods of unaided hearing loss do not rule out the benefit from implantation. So what sort of time frame should clinicians be aiming for in order to get eligible adults in for the procedure?
Generally speaking, when people meet criteria, they should get the device really as soon as possible. And the reason for this is prolonged deprivation of hearing can have detrimental effects, of course, on the nervous system, like we talked about, as well as communication and social functioning. So, you know, the biologic effects of auditory deprivation, specifically deafness for more than, say, 20 years, may not really be reversible. And then the secondary impacts on mental health, employment, and quality of life are really not worth sacrificing for long periods, especially if you're an older adult. So I think the short answer is get it as soon as possible.
Well, I could certainly say that for many of us who are under some more forced isolation these days and have experienced some of the negative mental and emotional effects of that, may be able to better appreciate what some of the sensory deprivation more hard of hearing patients may be experiencing now. Perhaps that can serve as a little bit more empathy for this group.
Yeah, good point.
Well, Dr. Buckman, as we come to a close, is there anything further that you would like to share with our listeners?
I just really like to recap just a couple of things. One is everyone should take from this that cochlear implant surgery is very, very safe and usually takes less than 2 hours as an outpatient procedure. These devices work exceedingly well for adults with moderate to profound hearing loss, especially when hearing aids aren't sufficient. They improve hearing, and this results in communication abilities that improve as well as quality of life in patients both with and without mild cognitive impairment, which we also talked about. In fact, you know, these devices might improve or at least stall cognitive decline, but I'm not willing to go there yet, but further work is certainly needed there. I believe that the indications for cochlear implantation should be expanded in the Medicare population as the data for its safety and effectiveness certainly supports this. And, you know, finally, we need to get out and tell this story to healthcare providers and the population at large. We've also begun the process of developing a clinical practice guideline with the American Academy of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery to advance the field.
Well, Dr. Buckman, thank you for joining us today and discussing the work done by you, your colleagues at Washington University in St. Louis, and the entire CI 532 study group. It will be exciting to see how this new data influences the decisions made by CMS for expanded use of cochlear implantation in older adults.
Thanks for taking the time, Joe, to ask us great questions, and we hope these articles move the field.
And thank you for listening to this JAMA Otolaryngology Author Interview Podcast. To subscribe and listen to more podcasts, go to jamanetworkaudio.com.